radio for extreme times. This is A View from Space with the Spaceman on Talk Radio AM 640.
I'm the Spaceman, and this is AVFS. I'd like you to be welcome. Feel welcome if you're driving around right now listening to AM 640, picking up the show there. Or if you're maybe at work listening via the AM 640 app, picking up the show that way, I welcome you in too. Or if you're listening to me right now on Shaw Direct on channel 865, picking it up there, I welcome you in. Or if you're listening to me on your 3 or 4G personal communication device via the Stream the World software, the fastest growing way to pick up this show, by the way, I welcome you in. Or maybe you're what some call that traditional seat, the best seat in the house, sitting in front of your Mac, your PC, logged on to 640toronto.com, picking up the live audio streaming there. I welcome you in wherever you are in the world. I welcome you in. Well, all this week, the Illuminati-controlled mass media has been beaming stories and images out to the entire world, almost exclusively on one single event, and that is the spectacle, the ritual, that is the Olympic Games, the ancient ritual of sacred religious sacrifice, don't forget it, in honor of the supreme god Zeus, the chief god of all Olympian gods of ancient Greece. That's what you're watching. It is the ritual. This is why it's still in existence. The Olympic Games. Zeus is the god of the Illuminati, the movers, the shakers of our world today. The elite are our overlords, and they are the builders. They are the architects of this world they're building. A world they're building to suit them, not you, to fulfill their desires, not yours. Zeus, the god to whom these games are dedicated, with each and every one of the games, by the way, comes replete with an oath and a prayer to Zeus, cited at the opening of each of the games. It's simply another name for Lucifer, Satan, who is the god of our global overlords. So, the hymn goes this way. The Olympic hymn is played when the Olympic flag is raised. The music composed by Spyrou Samara. The words added by Kostas of Greece in 1896. The Olympic hymn, also known informally as the Olympic anthem, is a musical piece composed by Spyrou Samaras, as I said, with words written from a poem, the Greek poet and writer Kostas Palamas. Both the poet and the composer were the choice of Demetrios Vikelas, a great Greek pro-European and the first president of the IOC. The anthem was performed for the first time at a ceremony of the opening of the first edition of the 1896 Athens Olympic Games. In the following years, every hosting nation commissioned to various musicians the composition of a specific Olympic hymn for their own edition of the Games. This happened up to the edition of the 1960 Summer Olympics held in Rome. That anthem by Samaras Palamas was declared the official anthem by the International Olympic Committee in 1958, and it was performed again from the edition of the 1964 Summer Olympics in Tokyo, Japan. Writer Paul Smirnoff used the anthem and its Greek lyrics in his book, Gothar Damarong, as a rebel song. The hymn has been recorded and performed in many different languages, usually as a result of the hosting of either form of the games in various countries. Recent examples include like the Spanish, the Mexico City 1968 and Barcelona 1992 games, German, the Innsbruck 1964 games, Munich 1972, which I talk about later in the show, and Innsbruck again in 1976. English, Placid, Lake Placid, 1980, Los Angeles, 1984, Atlanta, 1996, Salt Lake City, 2002, in Moscow, in Russia, 1980, Korea, the Seoul Olympics, 1988, Japan again in Tokyo, 1964, Sapporo in 72, and Nagano in 1998. French, it's the Grenoble 1968 games disappeared. Montreal, the 76 games in Canada here, and Albertville, 1992 in French. Serbo-Croatian Sarajevo had theirs in 1984, and the Norwegian Lillehammer games in 1994. For the first 2000 Summer Olympics in Sydney that they had ever held, the hymn was recorded and performed in Greek by the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese of Sydney with the Sydney Symphonic Orchestra in recognition of the substantial Greek population of Australia. Now, also added to its appearance in Athens in 2004, the decision was also made to use a great Greek arrangement, they thought, at the 1988 Winter Olympics in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and at the beginning of the 2008 opening ceremony, the Greek version was also sung in Beijing. The hymn was played in Moscow in 2001, prior to the announcement of the election of Jacques Rogge as the IOC president. On a lot of occasions, the hymn was also featured before the announcement of the winning Olympic bid. One such example was in 2003, before Jacques Rogge announced Vancouver, British Columbia, for the Winter Olympics here in Canada, as the city that would host the 2010 Winter Games. Though on that occasion, only the introduction was used. At the election of Sochi, Russia, as the host city for the 2014 Winter Games, no rendition of the anthem was used at all. Here are the words directly translated to English of the anthem. Ancient, immortal spirit, pure father of beauty, of greatness and of truth. Talking about Zeus. Descend, reveal yourself, and lightning here within the glory of your own earth and sky. As the god of this world, the glory of your own earth and sky. At running and wrestling, and at throwing, it goes on. Illuminate in the noble game's momentum, add crown with the unfading branch, make the body worthy and iron-like, make the body worthy and iron-like. Plains, mountains, and seas shine with you like a white and purple great temple, and hurries at the temple here your pilgrim, and hurries at the temple here your pilgrim, ancient immortal spirit, every nation, ancient immortal spirit. Every nation. When I return, you will not believe the show that's going on in Rideau. Not a lot of people are watching it, but it is the first games ever to be held in South America. And these are, after all, the South American games. They were made for the continent of South America. Up next, you won't believe it, but it's true. They make a connection with the very, with the very, very, very inauguration of the Olympics with today's 2016 version. Next on Talk Radio AM 640, I'm Spacin'. I'm just getting started. Forgot to call Space. This is Talk Radio AM 640. This is a view from space. I communicate by email only, space@640toronto.com or spaceman@640toronto.com, and they're already starting to fill the inbox, and I thank you so much for sending me one. Whatever you do tonight, I really appreciate it. If you hang around, if you contribute to the show, I thank you. Here's the Olympic oath. The athlete takes this oath in the name of all of the competitors, I promise that we shall take part in these Olympic Games respecting and abiding by the rules which govern them, committing ourselves to be a sport without doping and without drugs, in the true spirit of sportsmanship, for the glory of sport and the honor of our teams. The judge, also from the host nation, holds a corner of the Olympic flag, but takes a slightly different oath. It goes, in the name of all the judges and officials, I promise that we shall officiate in these games with complete impartiality, respecting and abiding by the rules which govern them in the true spirit of sportsmanship. They break these every year, but they still do the oath. Now, this oath wasn't always around. It was announced as early as 1906 by the IOC, the then president and founder of the modern games, the man who really put them back on track again, because there was an interruption from the ancient games to the modern games that we watch today, Pierre de Coubertin. Now, I tell you, these oaths and the hymn that I gave to you is a prayer and an oath to Zeus. And I say, they're still in the games. So, if Zeus is not their god, then why has not the IOC eliminated the oath and prayer from the opening ceremony? And why do they still go through the ritual of lighting the flame by the rays of the sun at the temple of Hera, Zeus's wife and sister? If they weren't sun worshippers, it would be long gone. But I say the elites running our world are. No, that's why the games still exist today, and for the same reason as when they were first established. A ritual, a spectacle of a religious sacrifice in the honor of the supreme god Zeus. The object of the games was, and still is, used to unite the world in a common sporting event. All that watch, ignorantly paying homage to the unknown spirit with offerings of worship. Those offerings of worship today are, of course, your country's athletes, the ones you donate to the show. The Olympic Games have already been used by the elites to bring the world together as one, in one place, and united under one god. Guess who it is? Zeus. This world-stopping event is the oldest continual single event in all of the history of the world. Being held continuously for over 2,000 years. Held every 4 years, called an Olympiad, taken from the ancient Greek calendar system. And yes, sure, there were small pauses, times when the Olympic Games were actually, in fact, canceled, but never for good. They always made their return. The Olympic Games have been relatively continuous, forget this, 2,792 years now, and counting. Yes, you heard me right. The Olympic Games have been relatively continuous for 2,792 years. This phenomenon, this Herculean record of longevity, this modern-day connection to these ancient gods of the past, was brought to light, made manifest in the Illuminati-controlled mass media just this very week at the Rio Olympics. Yes, the year of 2016. The connection to the ancient games of more than 2,000 years ago was made. This semi-continuous event, now having been held for 2,792 years, showcased in an ancient Olympic record that was smashed, that's now, this year, finally been broken. An Olympic record, we're told, that stood for an unbelievable 2,168 years. A record that was originally established 624 years after the very first Olympiad was ever held in Zeus's honor. Know what the record is? Of course you do. Well, maybe you don't. Because it is not one of the most watched Olympiads in history. It was the U.S. Olympic swimmer Michael Phelps winning his record-setting 13th individual gold medal, breaking an ancient record that stood since before Jesus Christ was born, if you believe the IOC. In fact, 152 years to be exact, before the birth of Jesus Christ. Just think, Christ wasn't born yet, 152 years before he was born in the manger in Bethlehem, this record that stood until this past week in Rio of Leodonis of Rhodes, recorded in history, kept for posterity, kept in safekeeping for 2,168 years. I mean, the Alexandria Library hasn't even lasted up until this time. None of that information has, but this record has. This new record achieved in Rio earlier this week by Michael Phelps has enabled the Illuminati to connect the modern games of today to the origin, the birthplace of the ancient games of Greece, and who the games were really for, Zeus, by having the American athlete winning more than 12 individual medals. Now a new Olympic record has been set this week. 13 individual gold medals by a single person was achieved. A record, as I said, that has not been surpassed for all of 2,168 years. Michael Phelps passed the man who set the longest standing record all time, who won 12 individual Olympic events back in 152 BC. The name again, Leodonis of Rhodes. Leodonis won 12 individual events over 4 Olympics. Phelps has actually competed at 4 Olympics also, but he did not medal at his first games, his first appearance. That was in Sydney, Australia. Few know this fact about Michael Phelps, and that is that he actually came out of retirement this year to compete at Rio, so that the Illuminati could allow him to set this magical record and flash it to the whole world. No, nothing happens by chance in this world. It's made, it's caused to happen by the elites. By the way, Michael Phelps also has his own set of emojis now. And here's where the numerology comes in. You probably have already picked it up, as numerology always does figure with Illuminati events. Phelps set a jaw-dropping record by achieving his 13th individual gold medal. Wait a minute. There's more. It's so important. A double 13 has been made manifest in connection with this Illuminati milestone event. He broke this long-standing record across 20 centuries at the age of 31. A backward 13. Phelps, 13 individual gold medals. and achieved it all at the ripe old age of 31 years of age. So a double 13 marked. This event was marked with the mark of the Illuminati, as I refer to it on AVFS, Talk Radio, AM 640. The 13, the number of birth, death, and reincarnation. Leonidas of Rome, the original record holder, was 36 years old, 5 years older than Michael Phelps, when he won his last three events in 152 BC. They were in races of about 200 and 400 meters. And one other gold was also won in a shield-carrying race. But the U.S. Olympian god, the man who now holds this astounding record of being the most decorated medalist of all times in the ancient or modern games, Michael Phelps, surpasses Leonidas of Rhodes, winning his 13th individual gold medal. Meaning, of course, competing in a sport where only one person competes alone. No team effort here. It's the Spaceman, Talk Radio, AM 640. More right after this break on ABFS. I'm the guy to call Space. It's Talk Radio, AM 640. Emails to space at 640toronto.com or spaceman at 640toronto.com. Thanks for the one you've sent. I've been talking about the U.S. Olympian god, the man who now holds the astounding record of being the most decorated medalist of all times, ancient or modern games, Michael Phelps. He's actually won more medals than over 100 countries in his career. Came out of retirement to win his 13th individual gold that allowed the Illuminati to make that connection to the ancient past of a record that was set before Jesus Christ was born. Yes, they keep records that long, they would have us believe. Michael Phelps has now won his 22nd gold medal overall. 13 individuals, but 22nd. This is including the team efforts. And his 26th medal overall, including all the silver and bronze medals that he won. But they're mostly gold. And believe me, the lion's share of that number is gold with that victory of his 13th individual. Phelps also joined the track and field Olympians Al Orter and Carl Lewis as the only Americans to win an individual event four times. When I say Phelps has won 22 gold medals, most in Olympic history, modern or ancient, what I really mean is that he finished first in these events because, you see, it was originally olive wreaths, not gold medals, that were awarded to each first place winner in those ancient games. Only in the modern games does this phenomenon take place. Not gold medals at all back then. But why is gold awarded for first place today then? The original prize for first was an olive branch, as I remarked, from which the wreath was made and was cut with a gold knife. Why gold? Gold represents the sun on earth. After all, the flame is lit by the sun. So a gold knife is used to cut the first place prize, the wreath, from an olive branch. The ancient Greeks believed that the vitality of the sacred olive tree was actually magically transmitted to the recipient through the branch. Magical, you ask? What do I mean by that? Just listen. Legend has it that Zeus once offered a contest between Athena and Poseidon for the possession of Athens itself. Poseidon raised up his three-pronged trident, smashed it on the hard rock of the Acropolis, and out sprang a salt spring. Athena, on the other hand, produced an olive tree with its rich fruit bountifully dangling from the branches. This dramatic showdown between the two most powerful Olympians outside of Zeus was immortalized in this stone structure, in fact, to this day that still stands, depicted on the west pediment sculptures of the Parthenon today. As a tourist, you could still see it, because it's still partially standing in modern-day Athens in Greece. The Athenians chose Athena's gift, and the olive tree has since that day remained a central part of Greek life ever since, for all of its profound qualities, we're told. Its magic, its source of power that has been and still is so revered by the Illuminati, you find it all through history. How? For instance, the leaves of the olive branch have been used to crown the heads of victorious athletes, not only those champions, but also generals in the armies of the wars of the great world, and kings also in their crowns. The wood from an olive tree has been used to construct houses and boats. The olive oil used to give fuel to lamps, rubbed into the toned, muscled bodies of the live athletes, too, that gave them that glistening effect, and added to food dishes as well. The olive tree was used in every single way. And we still use olive oil today, don't we, to cook our food with? As for the olives themselves, hey, they're a staple in the Mediterranean diet, and are still a valuable export throughout antiquity, and as well as they are today, of course. I mean, some people insist that olives got to be put on their favorite pizza. So I've already stated at the opening of tonight's show, the Olympic Games are the longest-running event in the history of the world, rarely interrupted or canceled. In fact, in ancient times, wars were in fact paused. They stopped fighting. No fighting was to be allowed while the games honoring Zeus were in progress. It was known as the Olympic Truce. In Greek, it's called the ekaisheria, which literally means the holding of hands. Ekaisheria was announced before and during each of the Olympic festivals to allow visitors to travel to Olympia, you see, to attend the games safely. An inscription, even, describing this truce was actually written on a bronze discus, which was displayed at Olympia. During the Olympic truce, wars suspended, armies prohibited from entering Elida or even to threaten the games where the games were held in Elida. What's more, in honor of Zeus, all legal disputes and the carrying out of death penalties were forbidden. So you see, no blood was to be spilled, save the blood sacrifices for Zeus himself. No other interference here. Elida, by the way, is the northwestern part of the Peneplies, which is the southern peninsula of mainland Greece, because it gets more rain than anywhere else, a lot more. Elida has better forests, better pastures than the rest of Greece. That's why the region was so respected in ancient times. It became a holy and neutral place because of the sacred grove that's there to Zeus, called Altis, at Olympia. The Olympic truce was faithfully observed, but rarely have the games ever been interrupted or even canceled. Now, the first of such interruptions is recorded in history by the historian Thucydides. Now, he recounts that the Lacedaemonians were banned from participating in the games after they attacked a fortress in Leprium, Atana, in Elis, in Greece, during the Olympic truce 1 year. The Lacedaemonians, to their defense, complained that the truce had not yet been announced at the time of their attack and didn't know of it. But the aliens fined them anyway, 2,000 minoi. which for each soldier, as the law required. Now, a minaiori of those ancient games was equivalent to about 100 drachmas. And just one single drachma, to give you an idea, was an average worker's daily wage. So the fine was a very hefty fine. And without money, of course, you can't pay soldiers to fight your battles. A hefty fine. There have also been other interruptions in the Olympic Games. Like from when the ancient games stopped and the modern day games picked up. That was the biggest time. But the time when the Illuminati first hijacked the games from Greece, and by the way, just look at what's happening in Greece today. They're being shafted every which way. And as they were also shafted in this hijacking of the games in 1908, those games were to be the first games, what we are now calling the intercalated games, that have been scheduled by the new body that assumed control of the Olympic Games, the IOC, in 1901, as part of a new schedule, where every 4 years in between the internationally organized games, it was decided that there would be intermediate games held in Athens, Greece. This is a compromise, because Greece didn't want to give up the games, but the world wanted them to come to our city. In the West, in Europe. This is a compromise. After the successful Games of Athens, 1896, the Greeks suggested they could organize the Games every 4 years, since they had the accommodations and had proven to be able to hold well-organized games. They got quite a bit of support, but the man they call the founder of the modern Olympic Games, Pierre de Coubertin, the Illuminati's point man on this hijack, didn't like this at all. He had intended the first games to be in Paris in the year 1900. The City of Lights. For Lucifer, of course. In order to come out more in the open and show to the world who these games were in honor of and had no intention of losing not only the premiere for Paris, but the games as well. So, the second games became the Paris 1900 Games. More on this when I return on Talk Radio M640, the hijacking of the modern-day Olympiad. Thank you so much for the email you sent. I really appreciate it. I really do, and I thank you for it. Spaceman at 640toronto.com. One address, the other space at 640toronto.com. I communicate by email only. And this mic. So, the modern games were hijacked by the West, taken from Greece to be spread around the world and used as a unifier for global domination. The first games were decided in the intercalated games, as they call them. It was 1900 in Paris, the City of Lights, of course, for the Angel of Light, Lucifer, their god, Zeus. And the Paris games of 1900 turned out less than perfect, as they hijacked them from the Greeks and were overshadowed, actually, by another world's fair. The IOC supported the Greek idea by granting them a second series of quadrennial games, as they called them, in between the first series. All the games would be international Olympic games. The difference was that only half of them would follow Pierre de Coubertin's idea of organizing them in different countries to make the Olympic movement international, global, while the other half would follow the Greeks' idea of a permanent home with the Greek National Organizing Committee and the Greek government, because they were the experienced organizers. This was a departure of the ancient schedule. Let me repeat that critically important statement that changed the scheduling of the Olympiads from then on. A departure from the ancient schedule, but it was expected that if the ancient Greek could keep a four-year schedule, the modern Olympic movement could keep a two-year schedule, as 1902 was now too close, and Greece was experiencing internal difficulties, the second Olympic Games in Athens were scheduled for 1906 instead of 1902. These intercalated Olympic Games were to be a series of international Olympic Games halfway between what we now call the Olympiad, every 4 years, not every two. This proposed series of games, in the Olympic Games cycle now, was to always be held in Athens and were to have equal status with the international games. But the only games, the only such games, as I've described, were held in 1906 only, one time. The Greeks were unable to keep that schedule for 1910, which was their next shot, just as the Beijing Olympics in 2008 had the Georgian War playing in the background to all of the Olympic news that was coming out as the only headline during the event. And what do we have here in 2016 playing in the background at the Rio Games? Well, the war in Syria, of course. You see, there's nothing new under the sun. It's simply history repeating itself. In 2008, the Beijing Olympics, there were problems in the Balkans, the Georgian Wars, that made things very difficult. It was also the fact that the modern Greeks found out the ancient Greeks were right. A two-year interval was too short. Well, there had been a gap of 6 years before Athens 1906 because the almost all-American nature of the 1904 St. Louis Games and a gap of 2 years after London in 1908 did not leave people enough time to prepare. So with the Games in Athens in 1910 made to be a failure, the Illuminati saw their chance to pounce, to spring into action. The result? Athens 1914 Games receive almost no support from the other countries of the world. Another wonderful interruption then happens. World War One, because this is 1914. World War One started, and any further intercalated games had to wait until after the big skirmish. But after the war, more than a decade passed since the Athens Games of 1906, and the idea of those so-called intercalated games was given up entirely, left in the dust after World War One. Since the second International Olympic Games in Athens now were seen as an obstacle for the Illuminati to assume control of the games and the timing of them, and what's more, is the, let's just call them personal views of various IOC chairmen, caused the IOC to retroactively downgrade the 1906 games so that the explanation for the games became that they had been a 10th anniversary celebration. As more pressure was brought to bear on the ancient continuation sequence of the four-year Olympiads, the games of 1906 did not fit in. Even to this day, the Illuminati-controlled IOC does not recognize Athens 1906 as an Olympic Games at all, and does not recognize any events that occurred there, even the setting of new records, the winning of any medals at all, as official, wiped out, ignored, snubbed. But the Illuminati did like one of the ideas of the intercalated games, and that was that those games took place 2 years either side of the Summer Olympiad. They, of course, have now been revived and are a double dose used by the Illuminati for the world of messaging and worshiping of Zeus, Lucifer, Satan, call them what you will, same entity. They're now known, of course, as the Winter Olympic Games since 1994. The Illuminati are very careful never to refer to the Winter Olympics as an Olympiad. So, after the disappointing debacle of the Athens 1906 games that set up new timing, they were scheduled to conjunct with all of those occult ritualistic events, like the Mayan calendar coming to an end, the Diamond Jubilee, the sinking of the Titanic, that paid for a lot of World War I, by the way, and in setting up the Federal Reserve Bank in the New World, this new soon-to-be empire that was to dominate after the Second World War, the United States of America, of course controlled by Britain. Remember now, Athens, 1906, was a bust. The Illuminati made sure it was, with the aid of their global influence. This set up this new timeline, the one I'm speaking about now on ADFS, on Talk Radio AM 640. They were now to be known as the 1908 Summer Olympics, the games of the fourth Olympiad. They were an international multi-sport event, which was awarded to who else? The real power in this world, to Great Britain, and held in London, 1908. But Great Britain did not win the bid. When I'm back, that revealed on the hijacking of the modern Olympiad. It's Talk Radio AM 640 on Space. More next. I'm a guy to call space. It's a view from space. It's Talk Radio AM 640. Thank you for the email you sent. I really appreciate it. I really do. And thank you so much for it. I have two locations, space at 640toronto.com or spaceman at 640toronto.com. So as I was saying before the break, these games, these new modern-day games, have been hijacked from Greece. Taken from Greece, why would they want the Olympics? Well, of course, you bring every country into a major event that's sport, a religious type of commitment to their sports, and all of the countries of the world now participate. That's why the elites wanted it from Greece. They had the great idea, linking the world as one using sport. So that's your answer. If you are wondering why they have been snubbing Greece and making them look foolish at every turn, even politically, they're the first ones to go on the huge debt skids, as you've been witnessing over the last 2 or 3 years with Greece, which is what they're going to do with every single country. So these new intercalated games, as they were called, these hijacked games by the Illuminati and the point man for it all, Pierre de Coubertin, had a multi-sport event awarded to Great Britain in 1908 in London for the new timeline to be set of every 4 years. But Great Britain, as I said before the break, did not win the bid. These games were originally scheduled to be held in Rome. Now, if you stuck with the ancient timeline of every 4 years, they would have been known as the fifth modern Olympic Games, but the Athens Games of 1906 were a total complete bust, wiped out, forgotten, buried, even the records that were set, nullified. They were totally ignored. So as I've already said, the Illuminati-controlled IOC does not recognize the 1906 Athens Games as an Olympic Games and does not recognize any events occurring there, even the setting, as I said, of new records and the winning of medals as official. The 1908 Games are now seen as the fourth Olympiad, usurping the real every 4 years sequence, in keeping with this newly accepted 4-year cycle that they've been put on by the new owners of the Games, the Illuminati, spearheaded by Pierre de Coubertin. And it began where time begins. And the purest of the bloodline of Satan lives through Cain are situated. Supposedly, London, England. Here's how London ended up with those 1908 games. their first of three hostings. No city in this world has ever hosted the Olympic Games, save one. And London has just done it. 2012 was their third. The selection process for the 1908 Summer Games consisted of four bids. There was Rome, there was London, there was Berlin, and there was Milan, Italy. Rome won the bid. The Vatican. They were selected ahead of London, ahead of Berlin, ahead of Milan. That selection was made at the 6th IOC session in Berlin, Germany, in 1904. Italy was preparing to hold the games when all of a sudden, uh-oh, trouble! Mount Vesuvius erupts, April 7, 1906, devastating the city of Naples. The Italians had no money for hosting an Olympics, since all of their resources went to the reconstruction of Naples. So, a new venue was required. London was selected for the first time to hold the games, which were held at White City, along with the Franco-British Exhibition at the time, a much more noteworthy event, by the way. The Illuminati not only wrested the games from the control of the Vatican, but in fact changed the timing of when all future Olympiads were to be held, since an Olympiad is only held every 4 years. A new cycle was begun. Another interruption in the Olympic Games occurred in 1940. The 1940 Summer Olympics, officially known as the Games of the 12th Olympiad of the modern day, were to be held in Tokyo, Japan, but were canceled. Why? Due to World War II. In July of that year, Japan abandoned its support for the Olympics due to the war. The games were then awarded to Helsinki, Finland, the runner-up city in that bidding for the 1940 games that year. But as I've said, suspended indefinitely were the games, and the Olympic Games did not resume until the London Games of 1948, when London got its second Olympiad. That was immediately followed at the end of World War II, 1948. The war ends in 39. Another time, and there was some rebuilding, you see, of all of Europe after the war, 1945 ended. When Lenin got the second Olympics, there is your telling tale. Every single time they're tinkered with, London ends up with them to correct all. Another time there was a major interruption in the games, it was during the infamous 1972 Summer Games held in Munich, Germany. Those games, now known as the Munich Massacre, not an Olympiad at all, that showcased an event that gave birth to the word terrorist to be used for the first time in the history. Although the method of using terrorism to effect change in people's attitudes towards their country, their lifestyle, and the way they view themselves, the way the world views them, the word terrorism have not been used as an expression of this act to effect change until the 1972 Olympiad in Munich, Germany. That event was used to stage the first terrorist act the West would see. Today, a day does not go by when that word, terrorism, is not mentioned in the Illuminati-controlled mass media. It has been a constant barrage of brainwashing since 1972. And, yes, it wasn't every day after 1972 that it was mentioned, but it became more and more and more until today. A day doesn't go by without hearing it. You see, it's the elite's catalyst for change. Terrorism. That are being meted out to shape this world into what the elites desire it to be, which is a de facto police state. Mark my words. The Munich massacre was the attack that occurred during the 72 Summer Olympics in Munich, West Germany. Germany was a part, two parts, East Germany, controlled by the Russians, West Germany, controlled by the West, at which 11 Israeli Olympic team members were taken hostage, eventually killed, along with a German police officer, by the Palestinian terrorist group calling themselves Black September. Shortly after that crisis began, they demanded the terrorists, 234 prisoners jailed in Israel, and the German-held founders of the Red Army faction, Andreas Bader and Ulrike Meinhof, to be released. Black September called the operation Ingrid and Biram, after two Palestinian Christian villages whose inhabitants were expelled by the Israeli army in 1948. More on the infamous 72 Munich massacre, known as the Games, the Summer Olympiad in Munich, Germany. Next. I'm going to call a spaceman. It's Talk Radio AM 640. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. Thank you so much for the one you've sent. PJ writes, Space, thanks for exposing the real Olympic Games. Writing from Nova Scotia, province here in Ontario. BJ writes, hey, Space, I found it interesting that in the first gold medal handed out at these Rio Games was to a person called Virginia Thrasher of the United States of America, who won gold in the 10-meter air rifle event. The state of Virginia is the only state to be known as the Commonwealth. Its nickname is the Old Dominion, and the first colony established in British America. It produced the most presidents of any state, and Virginia is said to have had a major influence on the writing of the American Constitution. It seems like Virginia is just another word for America, and there is no state as American as Virginia is. Virginia Thrasher, the winner of the 10-meter air rifle event, first gold medal awarded in these games in Rio, currently resides in Springfield, Virginia. Oh, and the guy who climbed the Trump Tower earlier this week came from the state of Virginia. Later, Space. Yes, there are, if you want to dig, so many little pieces of information that can lead you to the absolute truth. And that's what I do. That's what AVFS on Talk Radio AM 640 is about. It's not a conspiracy show. It's getting to the truth of the matter. And whenever anyone jumps out of the same politically correct, regurgitating the Illuminati-controlled mass media stories, they're labeled conspiracy theorists. Oh, and they're always nuts. Just slap the label on, and that's over. But this show, there's a little bit more to that. And I'm sure if you're a regular listener, you have realized this. Back to one of the interruptions, and there have been very few, in the modern day Olympiad. 1972, the first time terrorism, that word, ever got into the media, was in Munich at those games. The attack was supposedly motivated by secular nationalism, with the commander of that terrorist group having been born to Jewish and Christian parents. They had inside help, too. Here's how. The German neo-Nazis gave the attackers the logistical assistance to pull this off. There was a gun battle that took place. If you're old enough to recall what happened in 72 in Munich at those Olympic Games, Munich police killed 5 of the 8 Black September members during a failed rescue attempt. They captured 3 survivors, whom West Germany later released following a Lufthansa airliner hijacking in October of that year. The Jewish Secret Service, the Mossad, responded to the release with the 1973 Israeli raid on Lebanon. They called it Operation Wrath of God. They tracked down and killed the Palestinians they suspected of involvement in that massacre in Munich. In 1972 Munich Games, when that attack happened, they were well into their second week at that time of this terrorist attack. And that word again, terrorist, spoken for the first time to describe an event in the Illuminati-controlled mass media. It was used as a launching pad. But terrorism had been used centuries before. You keep it right here on AVFS on Talk Radio AM 640. And I'm revealing that deeper into the show. As well as the, well, we can call it the thwarted terrorist attack that happened here in Canada. That, too, also ahead. So, in Munich in 72, security was lax. For a reason. It was because, we're told, the West German Olympic Organizing Committee, finally hosting a global event, wanted badly to shake the negative image the world had of the last Olympiad held in Germany in 1936 with Adolf Hitler and his display that was held in Berlin. They wanted to shake that image. Also, of the military image the world had of Germany. This was the official excuse, anyway, as to why there was very little security presence at these games. But I tell you now, those Munich games were set up to launch terrorism on the biggest stage of them all, an Olympiad with the world watching, every single country participating, all eyes affixed. The official statements were that the organizing committee was wary of the image portrayed by the 1936 Berlin Olympics, which Nazi dictator Adolf Hitler used for his benefit. The documentary film One Day in September actually claimed that security in the athletes' village was so unfit for the games and that athletes could actually come and go as they pleased without being checked. Athletes could sneak past security, go to other countries' rooms by going over the fencing that encompassed the village. The absence of armed personnel even was brought up. And the worried Israeli delegation made that statement, saying it was too lax even before the Israeli team actually arrived in Munich. There's something also inextricably connected to that 72 Munich massacre and the Olympics going on now, this minute, in Rio. And that's something that went by completely without any coverage whatsoever. ever in the Illuminati-controlled mass media. It happened a week ago this past Wednesday, just a mere 10 days ago, a couple of days before the start of this 2016 Summer Olympics in Rio. The IOC, the Illuminati-empowered International Olympic Committee, officially honored those 11 Israelis I just spoke about that were murdered in the 72 Games in Munich for the first time in Olympic history, because they were never, ever mentioned up until now. Rio 2016. And I'm just thinking to myself, were the boys of Brazil being invoked again here at these games? You have to wonder. Because we do have Nazis that are running our world right now, whose aim is to bring the whole world under a system of total invasive physical and mental control. Physical control meaning where you can and cannot go, as well as mental control. I call it brainwashing on ADFS, on Talk Radio AM 640. Many people don't expect another terrorist attack in the Games of Rio, but almost everyone, to a man and woman, wouldn't be surprised if one in fact did take place. Speaking of terrorist attacks, if you've been keeping an eye on the brainwashing capital of the Illuminati-controlled mass media, the kingpin, BBC, the headquarters, the main cog in the Illuminati-controlled mass media, you will have seen this event yourself. It was mentioned once or twice. Now, you may, as I say, have seen it mentioned other places too. If you're hearing the show in Europe right now, or Australia, or in South America maybe, where many of my emails come from, it's indeed being touted as a global event, a global terrorist attack, therefore something I need to talk about on the show. I cover global events, not local. It happened in the very province of Canada that this show emanates from weekly. Ontario, a province in Canada. As you're well aware, you'll know Canada has been actively involved in the forefront of this war on ISIS up until just a few months ago. What I mean by forefront is that Canadian soldiers have been actively fighting on the ground, in the front lines, on the front lines. Our warplanes have been bombing so-called ISIS targets. We've stopped that. Earlier this week, near the end of the week, on an 11 day of all days, August 11th, an event happened that the authorities are calling a terrorist attack that was thwarted. It didn't happen, but was about to. But it was stopped just in the nick of time, we were all told. What a close call. This thwarted terrorist attack involved a young man of 24 years of age, just days short of his 25th birthday. His name? Aaron Driver. We're informed he was a self-proclaimed supporter of ISIS and killed by Ontario police in a confrontation at his home just as he was getting into a cab to go somewhere. As it turns out, that somewhere was to be a city near to his town that he was living in, London, Ontario, a larger city in Ontario, near his home in Strathroy, Ontario, where the confrontation happened. It said he was on his way with a homemade bomb to kill as many as he could in a mall in that city of London during rush hour. Now, during the news conference held by the RCMP here in Canada, there were many background details that we were told, but on this perpetrator, but very precious little information on some very key questions. For instance, as per usual in these Illuminati events. Lately, this person was known to the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, known as CSIS. No one yet was this close to a mass killing in London, Ontario. More next on Talk Radio, AM 640 on Space. I got to call Space. It's Talk Radio, AM 640. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. Sincerely appreciate the one you've sent. Thank you so much. I just started talking about Aaron Driver, a thwarted terrorist attack that happened earlier in the week. Now, it was never going to be carried out because I had told you the Olympics are on and they will interrupt wars to showcase an event like this. There will be no terrorist attack unless it is in Rio. Well, this is not including all of the Pakistan bombing that goes on all the time. I mean, that's almost weekly. But I'm talking about on a Western country. But Canada, this week, had a terrorist attack in the making that was thwarted. Here's how it went down. The RCMP and CSIS, the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, knew of this person, yet had no idea he was online spewing his allegiance to ISIS and hate for the West, even had a martyr video made. They had no idea. They had to be alerted by the American FBI to tell them, quick, something's up in Strathroy, Ontario. He is about to make a move. His video says, within 72 hours, I'm going to attack some public place and kill massive amounts of people. So, the police get into the car. As the RCMP call Strathroy, the police rush to the home, but it's beaten to the home by the cab driver, about to pick him up and take him to his destination, wherever that was going to be. Some speculate it would have been a mall in London, Ontario, a nearby larger city than Strathroy, Ontario, the one he was living in. By the way, he was on, not only did they know about him, he was on what's called a peace bond here in Canada. So, let me just finish for you, if you're not aware of the whole story. As the police rush to the house where this person is, thinking they'll apprehend him in the house, he's getting into a cab. The cabbie beat the cops to the man. He's about to drive away. There's a shootout. A bomb is set off in the back of the car, of the cab. And the bomb, by the way, didn't even wreck the upholstery. It's a joke. I mean, this kid failed miserably. An inept, incompetent terrorist. If you had to describe him as a terrorist, just a total, complete failure. But all the rhetoric is all there. The FBI explained to the Canadian Security Intelligence Service that he was really deeply involved in doing all these things online, spewing all of this hate. So as the Strathroy police arrived there, he sets the bomb off in the car, and they kill him. But we're not told how the cab driver escaped all injury, really. Didn't even spend much time in the hospital. Is at home right now, resting. He was in the car with the explosion in his back seat. And I saw some pictures of the inside of the car. That's how I know there was no upholstery even ripped. There was no meter in this cab. All cabs have meters. Uber isn't in Strathroy. So, he was supposedly known to us, but listen to this. He was also under what's called a peace bond. A peace bond, a peace bond is a court order in Canada here to keep the peace and be on good behavior and be on a good behavior for a period of time. This essentially means that the person must not be charged with a criminal offense. Peace bonds are often attached with conditions too, such as, oh, not having any weapons, or staying away from such and such a person, or staying away from such and such a place. Canada issues these in our courts to divorcing couples quite often. For instance, in other situations like staying away from weapons or the like, you get it. But the person must agree to these conditions. I repeat, the person must agree to these conditions and is essentially on his own cognizance. We're told that he did have a tracking bracelet, but a human rights, or I should say civil rights activist group, took it to court and had it removed for him. How convenient for the police, CSIS, the RCMP, who want more powers. They gave him this weak peace bond and released him on his own cognizance, knowing that he was involved in these nefarious acts online. Now, really, this peace bond is the first flag that comes up. He's known to the agency here in Canada, the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, that are primarily interested in the whereabouts of potential terrorists on their list, right? Well, they don't care where this guy is. He's just offered a peace bond at his court hearing in Winnipeg, Manitoba, here in Canada, not long ago. Now, he was set free on his own recognizance. In this case, Aaron Driver was ordered to live with his sister in Strathroy, Ontario. That's why he ended up there. And in this martyr video that was in the possession of the FBI, but not CSIS, the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, or the RCMP, but it was sent by the FBI as a tip from them, which, of course, hurriedly sent the Strathroy police to the address, where he was alone at the time, by the way. His sister and husband had gone out. I don't mean for a few minutes, like on a shopping trip. He was alone there for some time. So, the martyr video, in the possession of the FBI, but not the RCMP or CSIS, sent as a tip by the FBI. Thankfully, everyone in Canada is going, and the talk shows were full of it. Oh, good God, we're so thankful for the FBI, but why didn't we have this information, was the big question. Well, you are being baited. It just screams for the authorities in Canada, the RCMP and CSIS, to have more power over these types of individuals, who was totally harmless in the first place. I told you he was a incompetent terrorist, if you could call him that. But the rhetoric was all there. Oh, yes. Lines like in the manifesto, or in the martyr video, like, we thirst for your blood, Canada. Stuff like that. Just, you know, the spilling of your blood. Meaning Canadian blood. He stated in the warning to Westerners, he called the enemies of Islam, the only solution will be the spilling of your blood. Meaning Canadian blood. Now, after his appearance in court earlier this year in Winnipeg, it was last February, where a possible days-long hearing became a short little 10-minute rubber stamp by a provincial court judge of a peace bond agreement between the perpetrator, Driver, and the federal crown prosecutor. Can you believe this story so far? It's like, well, I've been describing the French police with all those terrorist attacks and getting away with it. Under an emergency measure, all the troops on the streets, and still they get away with it. The guy with the ice cream truck in Nice. What's in the truck? It's got guns and weapons in it. Oh, ice cream. I'm just going to give the people some ice cream watching the fireworks on the beach. Okay, pass through. But the road's blocked and there's no... They're Keystone Cops. They're Jacques Cousteau's, Inspector Clouseau's boys. That's what CSIS and the RCMP in Canada look like this week with this thwarted terrorist attack tipped off by America's FBI. Something smells. More next on Talk Radio AM 640. I'm Space. I'm a spaceman. It's Talk Radio AM 640. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. Thanks for the one you've sent. Let's take a moment here for DK, who has written sort of an ominous email to me, taking into account a few of the things that I've talked about here on this show here. Hey, Space, the next 24 hours is the 9th of Av on the Jewish calendar. Historically, this has always been a day of catastrophe for the Jewish people. The Georgia Guidestones, which I've talked about before in this show, has a six-sided stone, she says, that has the number 8, 14, 20, and 16. Put those numbers together and you get August for the 8, the 14 for the date coming up. It's now almost, well, at some places in the world, it's already the 14th. And the 16th? Possibly for the year 2016. Is it possible, my emailer states, that a major event could happen tomorrow with the dates lining up? Just a heads up. Keep up the good work. All right. Back to this thwarted terrorist attack here in Canada that would never be allowed, would never be triggered, because an Olympiad is underway. And there is no such thing as a terrorist attack while the Olympics are on. As I said, even this goes back to ancient times. Wars were paused, stopped, and all people from the countries were allowed to make their way to the Games to witness them in Athens, in ancient Greece. So as I said, we had a thwarted terrorist attack who was on a peace bond, we're seeing. There were 12 conditions that were agreed to on this peace bond earlier in this year, February, and his court date in Winnipeg, including not being in possession of explosives. Do you agree to that? Obviously, they let him walk, so he must have. Another condition was living at an address in Strathroy, Ontario, with his sister. Another was not being on social media and not contacting the Islamic State or any other terrorist groups. Had to agree to that. Most of the conditions driver agreed to expired December 1st. This year. But another, not to be able to have a computer or cell phone, was to run out August 31st, the end of this month. Because that's when a new school year would begin, you see. And Aaron Driver was expected to enroll in some type of post-secondary course in nearby London, Ontario, you see. How weak is this story, huh? The Crown and police in Winnipeg, Manitoba, where he was living at the time, wanted the peace bond because, as they put it in the document, they believed Driver may participate in or contribute to, directly or indirectly, the activity of a terrorist group for the purpose of enhancing the ability of a terrorist group to facilitate or carry out a terrorist activity. Good God, boys. Wow. Could you be more concise than that? Huh? But so else just so. So skipping the light, fantastic. Peace bonds are usually for 1 year here in Canada, but sometimes they're shorter even. For example, 6 months. 1 year is the maximum length, and there's 12 of them in this particular peace bond for Aaron Driver. And get this, after receiving the peace bond, he doesn't leave the courthouse. No, he strolls around the court building, being hounded by reporters, of course, but refuses to answer any questions to the reporters. Later on, after his long walkabout, all the newsies following him around, trying to get answers at him, to get him to say something, he puts on a black balaclava, a la a terrorist. What a look. And walks out of the court building. Fast forward from that February in Winnipeg to Strathroy, Ontario, last few days in Strathroy. When he's accosted by the police in Strathroy earlier this week, he's said to have been wearing what now appears to be exactly the same black balaclava in the back of the cab, with the exact same stare as we were told that he was using in his court appearance in Winnipeg last February. Can you imagine the cabbie? Some guy comes out of his house with a bag and a balaclava on, and it's like the weather in Ontario when this happened was like 35 degrees Celsius. It was sweltering hot. A guy with a balaclava gets into your cab. Yeah, where to, sir? I don't think so for a second. And then the police drive up and start shooting. Whoa, this cabbie's got to be in some kind of shock and awe, huh? Well, it's all a bogus patsy setup. This act was a setup using this patsy, known as Aaron Driver, to appear as though he was about to commit an awful, ungodly, vicious attack on unsuspecting Canadian citizens in a public place. At least that's what it seems like if you listen to the Illuminati-controlled mass media. All of this done for a very good reason, by the way. The reason is to change the Canadian attitude of being involved in the war on terror. You do this by staging a terrorist attack and say you're now a target, Canada. Change the way you see yourselves. Change your civil rights laws. Now, you all must change to adapt to this new threat. That's the message. They've been doing this type of brainwashing drills for years now, south of us in the U.S., with acts of violence, mass killings, with assault weapons, so they can change the gun laws in America. I followed every single one of those gun massacres on this show, and stripped down and showed you the reality of it all. They're doing this around the world, too. Have you noticed they've moved to this new tactic? Of course you have. They bring the war over to your country now. Instead of you going, well, it's so far away and it's not really affecting my life. Well, they need to affect your life. The message is the world's at war. Change now. Change your laws on privacy, on surveillance. Give the police more power. Why? Because they need it. Look at this kid with the peace bond. He got away with almost a mass killing. God, the bomb he was using, as I said, couldn't rip the furniture. But we escaped. Because of sheer luck. Not because the Canadians were quick and smart enough. It was because of luck. Sheer luck. That we were involved in this perfect storm of action and a sequence of events that all unfolded in a few short hours. No, minutes before the call was made by the FBI. Hey, something's going on. Get over there. before this deadly act was about to take place by an individual they already knew about, but didn't have enough power to track him and laws on their side to stop it. So, Canada, you better give up your rights. Thank God for the luck getting the video and information from an organization, the FBI. It's garbage. It's all lies. Space, more next. Talk Radio, AM 640. I'm the Spaceman. This is View from Space. That's all it is on Talk Radio, AM 640. As you're more than likely aware, can communicate with you one way only, email space@640toronto.com, one address, the other spaceman@640toronto.com. The reason why I haven't been getting to a lot of them this evening, because I do not read flattering emails on the air. But that's okay, you can send them, because I enjoy reading them, but I keep them to myself, personal. So I just wanted you to know that simple, small fact. But if you have any information, something that would aid the show, help you out, help our listener out, pass it along to them. Or if you just want to say where in the world you're listening to View from Space from, Talk Radio AM 640 from anywhere in the world, please let me know. So I believe this thwarted terrorist attack wasn't because of sheer luck at all that it was thwarted. It was because it's time to put a show on for the Canadian people, because the Canadian authorities want more power to the police. And this is one of those events where they can point to it and go, well, look at what happened here, because we need this new, more power to be more empowered. It's all lies. They wouldn't even tell the people. They knew that he was supposedly... How did they put it again in the Winnipeg hearing at his peace bond... hearing? Oh, yes. They put it this way. They believed driver may participate in or contribute to, directly or indirectly, the activity of a terrorist group for the purpose of enhancing the ability of a terrorist group to facilitate or carry out a terrorist activity. Now, this is a mentally disturbed kid, which I will get to in a few moments. But this is really what it's all about. The Canadian Security Service Organization, known as CSIS, and the RCMP that work closely together, have been caught more than a few times with their nefarious schemes and lies being exposed. Examples? Well, allow me. Take, for instance, the Dzanski case, the man that was tasered by RCMP multiple times in Vancouver's airport in 2007. After four RCMP officers responded to reports of this man throwing furniture in the Vancouver airport, where he had been locked up, really confined in a small space for quite a while. If you heard the whole story, I covered this on AVFS on Talk Radio AM 640 in 2007 as it happened. All four officers that did respond were charged with perjury following the inquiry into Dzanski's death. One of them was sentenced to 30 months in prison for perjury and colluding with his fellow officers at an inquiry into the death. They lied about what happened and what they did there. There was also this, the Air India bombing. That investigation and prosecution lasted almost 20 years and was the most expensive trial in Canadian history, costing nearly $130 million dollars. The conclusion was, at the end of 20 years and spending $130 million of taxpayer money, was that a cascading series of errors by the Government of Canada, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and the Canadian Security Intelligence Service had allowed the terrorist attack to take place. These are not my words. These are the conclusion of 20-year trial, $130 mil spent. It was a cascading series of errors, Keystone Cop-like, if you will, Inspector Clouseau-like, involving the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the RCMP, and CSIS, the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, along with the Government of Canada, whoever the hell that is. I mean, what were they even involved in here? There was no politician out putting that bomb on that plane. The Air India Flight 182, an Air India flight operating on the Montreal, Canada, London, England, Delhi, India route, and a bomb was placed on that plane in Vancouver, and it detonated at a stopover. The bomb killed all 22 crew members and 307 passengers. 132 bodies were actually recovered out of the 307 passengers and 22 crew. 197 were lost at sea. 8 bodies exhibited flail pattern injuries, indicating they had exited the aircraft before it hit the water. This was a sign that the aircraft had broken up in midair. A bomb! 26 bodies. 26 bodies showed signs of hypoxia, lack of oxygen. 25, mostly victims who were sealed near windows, showed signs of explosive decompression. 23 of those bodies had signs of injuries from a vertical force. 21 passengers were found with little or no clothing at all on them. It was found that the RCMP deleted crucial evidence and other information detrimental to finding out who was responsible. In other words, they let them go. They made sure they were not found out. The RCMP deleted crucial evidence. The killer and his accomplices are still walking about now, this minute, this second, free men. 20-year trial. Then, there was, as you're probably aware as I am if you live here in Canada, that there were so-called terrorist attacks that had happened in this country in the last couple, 3 years. All bogus. Events that have to be stretched beyond a person's imagination and what makes sense to appear as though it was a perpetrator committing a terrorist attack. In this near-miss case, the Canadian Security Service Agency is supposedly in the know about him. Yet he's able to buy the makings of a homemade bomb. I'm talking about Aaron Driver now. The bomb he supposedly sets off in the back of the cab that he couldn't even rip the upholstery of the seat that it exploded on. And he was supposed to take that device and kill masses, amounts of people in a public place? All you have to do is look at the bomb's destruction after he's confronted by Strathroy police, and it didn't even damage the car. No damage to the cab's interior at all can be seen. It's just, it looks like a whole bunch of firecrackers were let off because it was just debris all around laying on top of completely undisturbed upholstery. There was no meter in the cab either, as I remarked earlier. Quite curious, if you ask me. Was it an actual cab? Or maybe a car owned by Cesus, maybe? Because it wasn't Uber. It wasn't Uber. They're not there. It was a cab company, we're told, in Strathroy, Ontario. Or was it? And oh, the cabbie, I bet he doesn't ever pop up in the media ever to be interviewed. Would I like to hear the cabbie's tale of that? Space Talk Radio, AM 640. I'll return in a moment. Email us to spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. It's the only way I interact with you besides this microphone. Thank you so much for the one that you've sent. So let me continue on here with this so-called thwarted terrorist attack that happened earlier this week. Well, late in the week, but not just more than a few days ago. As a matter of fact, it was actually on the 11th, which was the same day that Michael Phelps was making history with that connection I told you about at the very beginning at the opening of the show here tonight. So, everyone, and this is especially interesting to you if you're a Canadian listening to me at this moment. Every one of our so-called terrorist attacks, everyone, have in fact been done by mentally disturbed men, not ISIS radicalized people. This Aaron Driver, the latest terrorist attack in Canada here to be thwarted, is no different. I'll get to those other terrorist attacks too, or would-be terrorist attacks, in just a second. But Aaron Driver is no different than those others, if you know or cared enough to check into the past of Aaron Driver. More on that in a minute, here on AVFS and Talk Radio AM 640. Take the shooting on Parliament Hill now. One of our terrorist attacks. Our federal government headquarters in Canada, Parliament Hill, in Ottawa. As well as the other terrorist attack they call a terrorist attack in this country. And that's the one of the perpetrator running over two Canadian forces members, supposedly hit in a parking lot by a lone wolf terrorist, Martin Couture-Rouleau. Was in a shopping center with his car, parking lot, in Saint-Jean-sur-Richelieu in Quebec. And I'm not going to go through all of this again, but 70% of Canadians don't even believe either one of those was a terrorist attack at all when they're asked. So they didn't do a very good job of giving the Canadian citizen the illusion that we're being targeted by ISIS-loving terrorists. Believe me, if you believe either of those was a terrorist attack here in Canada, email me and tell me your facts. Or do you just have the regurgitated story given to you by the Illuminati-controlled mass media? Believe me, if you believe either of those was a terrorist attack, you've been duped. After hearing all of the evidence, and you're on the other side, still not sure if it was or wasn't a terrorist attack. It's plainly not. Believe me, with terrorist attacks, you don't wonder if they were one or not. They just damn well are. They're atrocities. These Canadian claims of terrorist attacks are so very weak and need to be stretched to their limit to call them one. The perpetrator of the Parliament Hill shooting was such a case. In that case, the shooter of the unarmed Canadian soldier guarding the peace monument that was killed by police was the son of a woman who worked for the Immigration Department in the Canadian government. I take you back now to the Air India story. The Canadian government was partially responsible, along with the RCMP and CSIS, our security agency, for allowing that to happen and actively destroying, deleting very pertinent information as to who the perpetrators were. A Canadian soldier killed, but the perpetrator on the Parliament Hill, a mental condition there. I believe it was set up by his psychiatrist. The errand driver, suspect, same thing. A setup. He was the son of a fourth generation member of the Canadian Armed Forces. His stepmother was also enlisted in the Canadian Armed Forces. And by the way, the father of Aaron Driver, Wayne, very harsh on his son. Glad they killed my son. He was a bad guy. He's now said to be training to be a pastor, having quit the Canadian Armed Forces in Cold Lake, and he's still in Cold Lake, Alberta. Working at the Harbor Light Alliance, training to be a pastor. Right. Well, that's where he was stationed while he was in the forces. I believe his stepmother is still enlisted. Young Aaron Driver lost his mother, his real mother, you see, at the age of 17 to brain cancer. He loved his mother dearly. At one point, he even refused to eat so he could die and be with his real mother. He blamed his father for her death. He's always said, "I wish it was you," his father, "who died instead of his mother." He also blamed his dad for the death. I bet you, when Aaron Driver witnessed the marriage of his enlisted father, the Canadian Armed Forces Air Force Corporal, when he married this other enlisted person in the Canadian Armed Forces that took his real mom's position, it sent him over the line to a deeper kind of hate for his father and the Canadian military. Key here. His family, in fact, reveal a difficult childhood, starting with his mother's death when he was 7. A decade later, he was struggling in school, dabbling in drugs, got a girlfriend pregnant who then miscarried. Wayne, his father, said Aaron, his son, the perpetrator, never went through the grieving process for his mother and became angry, saying he wished it was me, his dad speaking here, who died instead of her. He said Aaron lived with him right up until he remarried. I say that played a huge role in the hatred of his father and the Canadian Armed Forces, the military uniform. Then he bounced around between his sister and brother, back to his brothers in Winnipeg. That's who he was staying with, living with when he was on that peace bond in that hearing. And back to his father again in Cold Lake, and a halfway house for boys and child services. Plenty of places, plenty of times for a psychiatrist to get a hold of him. He returned to live with his father at the age of 21. His father even admitted they had taken him earlier in life to a psychiatrist for help, but he refused. I believe it was either when he was with his dad or he was in the halfway house for boys and child services when this brainwashing from a psychiatrist and drugging happened. I believe when he was with his dad, when the armed forces people were around, he could easily be set up with the programming for CSIS to use the Canadian Security Services, could use down the line. Again, the reason to do this, to use this person and harness his hatred to get more power, to surveil the public, to change the laws. Yeah, he hated his dad, and by association, hated the Canadian Armed Forces. That's the real reason why Aaron Driver was said to have applauded the Parliament Hill attack. It was an attack on a Canadian soldier in uniform at the Peace Monument that represents all the dead soldiers of all the wars. Wake up, Canadian citizen. These are not terrorists. They're drugged, crazed men. They're passing off as terrorists, used to get you to give up your principles and what few freedoms you have left. His true mother, taken from him at a young age, replaced by a soldier mother. A brainwashing psychiatrist could easily harness that rage and say to him, along with the drugs at their disposal, to aid them to say, you hate your dad. You hate your stepmom. You can get back at them. How? They're in the Canadian military. You hate that lifestyle. You hate them. Who's the biggest enemy of Canada's military? ISIS. What if you just told them you joined ISIS? That would really show them, wouldn't it? Tell them you're going to be a terrorist. Can you see the scenario? I've stated this many times on the show. There are psychiatrists treating these people behind the scenes and are never, ever mentioned who they are. Every time there's a terrorist attack, I can trace it back to a psychiatrist. They have used one. They have been around one. Or they've been in the armed forces, which is a very, very easily accessible, makes it accessible for psychiatrists. And also, if you're in, say, a child services or a halfway house, easily accessible without anyone else's knowledge. And drugs help out a whole lot to keep them coming back to that shrink for more brainwashing until they're painted into a corner and are showing the way out of that, which is their deed that they perpetrate on innocent people. I'm the Spaceman. This is Talk Radio, AM 640. I got more right after this. I'm the guy to call Space. It's Talk Radio, AM 640. And if you would like to pass along some information, say where in the world you're listening to me from, or just want to say hi, it's spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. Thanks for yours. I appreciate it. So as I said, I've stated a lot of times, there are psychiatrists treating these people, these perpetrators of terrorist attacks behind the scenes, and are never, ever mentioned who they are, because their names are kept out of the Illuminati-controlled mass media. I'm talking about the psychiatrists that treat them. And what's more, these psychiatrists are all exonerated in Canada and the U.S. and never are legally bound to appear in court to give evidence on their patients' actions, ever. Why? It's all about the doctor's personal protection of a condition of a patient. It's private. Oh, really? When you kill dozens of people with an assault weapon, it's private. private psychiatrists are exonerated from testifying, they get off scot-free. What a neat little loophole to shift all of the focus on the real story, what's happening with these so-called terrorists that do these mass killings. They have valuable evidence as to why these sick people have done what they've done. And like I laid out in the scenario, the possible scenario for Aaron Driver, they could even be the one who shows the person what they need to do to get rid of all of their problems. Do this, you'll feel better. The only way you can escape these awful feelings are to exact this revenge. Then you will feel better. They're even programmed to off themselves if it's likely they're going to get caught. And most of them are on a suicide mission. That's going to make them feel better. They've been talked and drugged into believing it. So I believe the public has a right to know about these psychiatrists. But the Illuminati are our overlords. And the public doesn't matter. They're just supposed to be the unsuspecting targets for these mentally disturbed people to do their deed so the authorities can use the person to enact changes, to force changes in your laws in Canada, in America, in other countries around the world, to your constitution, changes to your privacy laws, your civil rights. Here in Canada, the world was told by the Illuminati-controlled mass media that a terrorist plot was foiled at the very last minute during the first week of an Olympiad. It was never intended to be carried out. Even if by a small mistake it happened. Remember, during the Olympiad, even wars have been halted to pay respect to the honoring of Zeus. There'll be no blood sacrificing for other causes than for the chief of all gods. You see, the timing here is perfect here in Canada. And I want to repeat that again because I want to set it up for you nicely. You see the timing here of this thwarted attack, this thwarted terrorist attack is perfect timing here in Canada for this close call. And the foiling of this event. Why? Well, we have our government very soon to come back from their summer vacation, and they will be reviewing a highly controversial bill called Bill C-51. Bill C-51 was introduced at the end of January 2015. Sets out an extended Canada anti-terror law dissertation beyond legislation. Then the then Liberal government implemented just after 9/11. Then the Conservatives took it a step farther. Bill C-51 came at a time when tension over threats on terrorism on home soil were high. Attacks on the Canadian soldiers that October, as I told you, in eastern Canada, a man running over a couple of uniformed men, as well as the attack on the Charlie Hebdo office in Paris. The world was abuzz on terrorist attacks, and we were often cited by members of the government for justification of tougher laws. The bill, though, is not just about terrorism. It's about granting greater powers to police authorities to target activities that could, may, just might undermine the security of Canada. as well as activities that are detrimental to Canada's interests. You should know, too, that this had been tabled in our legislature in an election year. The Conservative Party, the outgoing party, had been using all kinds of images of jihadi terrorists in emails and on social media to drum up support for the bill. And the party in general. For some, national security was going to be, for this latest Canadian election that's just happened, as much of an election issue as the economy, which has really tanked badly. But then, that's nothing new to you if you listen to AVFS on Talk Radio AM 640. I've told it like it is. Every week. Now, if, and I say now when it's implemented, this bill C-51 would mean broader and significant changes to national security measures. This bill was opposed by every other political party, including the one that is now in power, the Liberals. Every other political party unanimously, only the Conservative government then in power that tabled it with a majority wanted it. Its main provisions would facilitate information sharing among 17, and some say even more than 17 federal institutions, gives police powers that would allow them to preventively detain or restrict suspects, ban the promotion of terrorism, allow the public safety minister to add people to Canada's no-fly list, and enhance the powers of Canadian spy agency CSIS. They got a great track record. You want to give more power to them? These provisions have, as you can well imagine, have millions in this country up in arms. Why are Canadians concerned? One of the biggest reasons surrounding the measures that would grant greater powers to the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, CSIS. The now Canadian Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, listed three ways this Bill C-51 law will, in his view, improve the safety of all Canadians. Number one, by making preventative arrest easier. When police suspect someone could be planning to carry out a terrorist activity. Number two, make Canadians more safe by strengthening Canada's no-fly list. And already we're having trouble with people that are on the fly list that are like 8 years old and can't get on the damn plane. And every time they do fly, they got to go through this whole red tape thing. And they say, okay, all right, we know it's him. And you come back the next time and you're still in the same bucket. Still on the list. Oh, and number three, by improving communication and coordination of potential threats among federal agencies. Like they don't talk now? The hell? Space Talk Radio, AM 640. I'm going to call Space Talk Radio, AM 640. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. M in Manitoba. You were right, spaceman, and we know it. You know, I think he's absolutely right, because even if you go, wow, that guy's way out there on that radio station. You ever heard him? Even those people that listen instinctively know deep down inside their heart the truth when they hear it. A human being has that uncanny knack, but it's whether they want to admit it consciously or not, but they know it's the truth. One more thing I want to say, and I don't want to bore my international listeners with Canada's problems, but the reason why I talked about this tonight is because whatever country you're listening to me in now, whatever country you're living in, you're next. They're coming for you, too. Because they're coming for every country to take away their rights, their joie de vie, whatever it is. Look what they have done with France. So, the Canadian Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, when asked about what he would like to see amended further on this bill, C-51, because they're going to amend the bill. They could repeal some of it. What do you think is going to happen now with this Aaron Driver story? This will, and this is why it was used. It's pretty much going to put a stop to anything that they want to repeal, wouldn't you think? They have an excuse now. They can just go, well, you can't take that out of there. Look what happened there in Strathroy, Ontario. Oh, my God. Millions could have died. Bill C-51, this anti-terror bill, the Canadian Prime Minister, now sitting, has said, narrowing and limiting the kinds of new powers that CSIS and national security agencies would have is one of my objectives. This new Canadian Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, also said his party would bring in a mandatory review of this anti-terrorism act every 3 years and introduce oversight of CSIS, our security agency, by a committee of MPs. We'll soon, very soon, see, won't we? If after this supposed thwarted terrorist attack, we'll change his mind on that. We're all watching. All around the world are watching. Now, to see. You're going to repeal some of C-51? Can't see it now. You've got your excuse, because all of those statements I've read to you about this new prime minister was said before he became the prime minister. That's why I say we're all watching now around the world, waiting to see. The already very, very secretive security agency, CSIS, and the RCMP, with almost complete anonymity on what they do, being kept secret completely out of the purview of the Canadian citizen whom they're supposed to be working for, who, after all, is supposed to live in a democratic country with the right to free speech, free movement, and personal privacy. All those things the elites want to remove from all societies, not just Canada. Canada is just being singled out now. And it's this country, Canada, beginning to look a lot more and more like a police state I talked about earlier in the show tonight. Yes, a very secretive security agency with autonomy, more power, is just what they need in this supposed democratic country, right? It's the oldest trick in the book. Are you falling for it? This oldest trick in the book dates back all the way to Roman times, creating the enemy you need. That's what it is. That's what's so beautiful about this phantom army called ISIS that has no uniform, no country, no look, no nothing. They're just ghosts. It's the enemy the Illuminati need. Like I said, oldest trick in the book. 70 BC, okay? Know your history? An ambitious minor politician, an extremely wealthy man, Marcus Licinius Crassus, wanted to rule Rome. Just to give you an idea of what sort of man Crassus really was, he's credited with the invention of the fire brigade. Oh, you think that's a good thing? Well, Crassus's version of the firefighting slave is a lot different than you think of a fire brigade. These firefighting slaves would race to the scene of a burning building, whereupon Crassus would offer to buy it on the spot for a tiny fraction of what it was worth. If the owner sold, Crassus' slaves would put the fire out immediately. But if the owner refused to sell, you know what Crassus would do? Allow the building to burn to the ground. By means of that little business plan, this little business model, Crassus eventually came to be the largest single private landholder in Rome. There were a lot of fires in Rome in those days when he was there, and used some of his wealth to back Julius Caesar against Cicero. In 770 BC, Rome was still a republic, you see, which placed very strict limitations on what rulers could and could not do. And more importantly, not do. But Crassus had no intentions of enduring such limits to his personal power. So he concocted a plan. He contrived a plan. Is history repeating itself here again with this terrorism thing? And I say the answer to that is an emphatic, yeah. Crassus seized upon the slave revolt led by Spartacus in order to strike terror into the hearts of Rome. See, terrorism has been used throughout the age. I'm talking about 70 BC. Crassus seized power led by Spartacus in order to strike terror into the hearts of Rome, the Roman citizens, whose garrison Spartacus had already defeated in battle. But Spartacus had no intention of marching on Rome. What he wanted to do, a move he knew would be suicidal, marching on Rome. Spartacus and his band wanted nothing to do with the Roman Empire and had planned from the very beginning merely to loot enough money from their former owners in the Italian countryside to hire a mercenary fleet in which to sail to freedom. Escaped the hell out of there. Sailing away was the last thing Crassus wanted Spartacus to do. He needed a convenient enemy with which to terrorize Rome itself, the people of Rome, for his personal political gain. So Crassus bribes the mercenary fleet to sail without Spartacus, then positioned two Roman legions in such a way that Spartacus had no choice but to march on Rome. The very thing he did not want to do and knew was going to be suicidal. Terrified of the impending arrival of this much-feared army of gladiators, Rome's citizens declared Crassus praetor. Crassus then crushes Spartacus's army, and even though Pompey took the credit, Crassus was elected consul of Rome in the following year. Because he tricked the Roman citizen into the trap of creating an enemy for his own need. Terrified of that impending arrival of that much-feared army of gladiators, Rome declared Crassus praetor. So with that maneuver, the Romans surrendered their republican form of government, too. Soon would follow the first triumvirate, consisting of Crassus, Pompey, and one guy named Julius Caesar, followed by the reign of the godlike emperors of Rome. It used to be by election. Crassus took care of that. The Roman citizen was hoaxed into surrendering their entire republic and accepting the rule of the emperors. Terrorism works like a charm. Why? It's magical. This is Spaceman Talk Radio, AM 640. More Flip Sabbath break. I'm that guy they call the spaceman. This is Talk Radio, AM 640. Communicate by email, space@640toronto.com or spaceman@640toronto.com. JL writes, Space, I think the missing link with people wondering how the masses could accept the police state or authoritarian entities is the 20-plus year erosion of personal responsibility. You know, it's been under attack for the last two decades or more. Personal responsibility. You don't take responsibility for actions anymore. Blame it on a disease, a condition that you have, or just the way things are, but it's never your fault. But I really believe it comes down to people not just accepting responsibility for their own actions, but actually being vigilant and guarding their personal freedoms and their civil rights. Because there's always people around, like I spoke about before this hour ended, Crassus. It's the oldest trick in the book. Dates back to Roman times. You create the enemy you need. And that's what's been happening. And people are so willingly ready to give up their real freedoms without actually understanding or comprehending what that actually entails and what their world will look like when they do give the okay for groups like CSIS and the RCMP to have more power. So that's my comment on that. KR writes, greetings from Medellin, Colombia. Thank you so much for that. Appreciate it. Knowing where the show is reaching. It's always fascinating. All right. I told you about Crassus. The way he sided with Julius Caesar. And how the citizens of Rome lost their republic and gave over to, because of their scarerism, gave over to the crazed Roman emperors. They were all bloodlined, by the way. Yes, the Romans were hoaxed into surrendering their republic and acceptance of that rule of emperors. Julius Caesar's political opponent, Cicero, for example, for all his literary accomplishments, he played the same damn games in his campaign against Julius Caesar. He claimed that Rome was falling victim to an internal, vast right-wing conspiracy in which any expressed desire for legislative limits on government was treated as suspicious behavior. Oh, so like why wouldn't you want your personal freedoms to be curtailed? What are you hiding? Treated as suspicious behavior. No, we're just kind of guarding what we already have and don't want you to take it. We got to be vigilant or you will. Cicero, in order to demonstrate to the Roman citizen just how unsafe Rome was, he hired thugs, ISIS, to cause as much disturbance and damage as possible, and campaigned on a promise to end the internal strife if he was elected and granted extraordinary powers. What Cicero only dreamed of, Adolf Hitler succeeded in doing. And today, the powers the authorities can have for total surveillance, invasive prying into private matters of people, Adolf Hitler looked like a farmer compared to the technology that they have today to do it. No, Cicero could only dream of what Adolf Hitler succeeded in doing. And what Adolf Hitler succeeded in doing for a while, today's leaders are out of this world. The distance between Adolf Hitler and what he could do and what they're now capable of doing, if given the power. The elected chancellor of Germany, Adolf Hitler, like Crassus of Rome, had no intention of living with the strict limits to his power imposed by German law. But not like Cicero. Hitler's thugs were easy to recognize. They all wore the same brown shirts, but their actions weren't any different than those of their Roman predecessor. They staged beatings, they set fires, they caused as much trouble as they could, while Hitler made speeches promising that he could end the crime wave of subversives and terrorism if he was granted extraordinary powers. Does that not sound like, no, let me change my words, does that not sound exactly what Bill C-51 for the Canadian citizen entails? The police screaming, begging for more powers. Well, Hitler did the same thing, promised that he could end the crime wave of subversives and terrorism if he was granted extraordinary powers, the ones that our authorities want today. Then the Reichstag burned down. A staged terrorist attack. Was the Reichstag burning down? The Germans were hoaxed again into the same way the Romans were, surrendering the Republic, accepting the total rule of Dafür, Sieg Heil. The next sponsored state school that your child might attend, I'll never tell you that. But governments rely routinely on hoaxes to sell their agendas to an otherwise reluctant public. The Romans accepted emperors. The Germans accepted Adolf Hitler. Not because they wanted to, but because of the carefully crafted illusion of threat, appearing to leave no other choice. Our government, too, uses hoaxes to create the illusion that we, the people, have no choice but the direction the government wants us to go in. In 1898, Joe Pulitzer's New York World, William Randolph Hearst's New York Journal, argued for American intervention in Cuba. Hearst reported to have dispatched a photographer to Cuba to photograph the coming war with Spain. When the photographer asked just what war that might be, Hearst was reported to have replied, "You take the photographs, I'll provide the war." Hearst was true to his word, as his newspaper published stories of great atrocities being committed against the Cuban people, most of which turned out to be complete and total fabrications. On the night of February 15, 1898, the USS Maine, lying in Havana Harbor, in a show of U.S. resolve to protect her interests, exploded violently. Captain Sigsbee, the commander of Maine, of that ship, urged that no assumptions of enemy attack be made until there was a full investigation of the cause of the explosion. For this, Captain Sigsby was just taken apart in the press for refusing to see the obvious. The Atlantic Monthly declared flat out that to suppose the explosion to be anything other than a deliberate act by Spain was completely in defiance of the laws of probability. Shut up, Captain. You know what you're talking about. We don't need an investigation. We know who did it. Right. This is Spaceman. It's Talk Radio, AM 640. Remember now to call Space at Talk Radio, AM 640. You communicate by email, space at 640toronto.com or spaceman at 640toronto.com. Thanks so much for the one you sent. I'm going to call him J.H. He writes from Boston, Mass. There's nothing you can conceive that's not already happening to us right now. On a global level, my friend, welcome to the new world. I'd just like to stick one more word on there. Welcome to the New World Order. That's what I call it. Thank you for that. Slipping that message. I don't remember who it was who said it, but those who do not know their history, as I've been showing you here tonight, ancient Rome and the parallel we have today, those who don't know their history are doomed to repeat it. But I have another saying in this show that keeps going on and on and on and on, over and over and over, because it always works. There's nothing new under the sun. It is simply history repeating itself. And it's going to be done until the globe becomes one. It will not stop. It is going to be constant changes being made. So I was talking about the Reichstag staged terrorist attack event, setting up Der Führer, the Germans surrendering their republic for a dictator, for their protection. Went back to ancient Rome for you. The USS Maine, 1898, blows up in the harbor of Havana. Spanish War. Newspaper wars. Hearst. Joseph Pulitzer. The guy whose Pulitzer Prize is named after sends a photographer to Cuba, William Hearst does, big newspaper magnate, to photograph the coming war with Spain. The photographer asked, as I told the story before, just what that war might be, and Hearst said, hey, you take the photographs, I'll provide the war, don't worry. We can get it done. And February 15th, 1898, USS Maine blows up in the Havana Harbor. They blame it on the Spaniards. But the captain of the ship goes, no, hold on. Don't go jumping to conclusions. We'll have a full investigation of the cause of that explosion first. They took him apart in the press for refusing to see the obvious. We don't need no damn investigation. Was them Spaniards. Shut up. Under the slogan, remember the Maine, Americans went to war with Spain. Eventually, they won the Philippines. They annexed Hawaii along the way. And that's why Hawaii is one of the states today. In 1975, an investigative reporter, led by Admiral Hyman Rickover, examined the data recovered from a 1911 examination of the wreck of the Maine and concluded that there had been no evidence at all of an external explosion. The cause of the sinking of the USS Maine was coal dust exploding in a coal bunker that was very stupidly located next to the ship's magazines with all the shells in it for the cannons. Captain Sigsbee's caution was right on the money. But they called him an idiot that was completely in defiance of all the laws of probability that was the Spaniards who blew it up. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt needed a war, too. He needed the fever of a major war to mask the symptoms of a still deathly ill economy. America was in dire straits, struggling back from the Great Depression and mutating towards socialism of all things at the same time, which was the Bernie Sanders scenario in 2016. Depression in America? I've described it already. That's what's been happening. It's only the stock market's performing well. No one else is doing any good. Doing well. They're all losing money. They're all in debt, hopelessly in debt. And they are mutating towards socialism with the Bernie Sanders phenomenon. Roosevelt wanted a war with Germany to stop Hitler. But despite several provocations in the Atlantic, the American people still did not want to get into any war. They were still struggling with that troublesome economy and were opposed to any wars. Roosevelt violates neutrality with Lend-Lease and even ordered the sinking of several German ships in the Atlantic. But Hitler refused to be provoked. He didn't want to bite. Roosevelt needed an enemy. And if America would not willingly attack that enemy, could talk the people into it, then he would have to be maneuvered into attacking America. Just like Marcus, Licinius, Crassus, that I told you about in Rome, maneuvered Spartacus into attacking Rome. Roosevelt maneuvered the Japanese into attacking Pearl Harbor. The way he opened a war was created when Japan signed that tripartite agreement with Italy and Germany, with all parties pledging mutual defense of each other. Whereas Hitler would never declare war on the states, no matter the provocation. The means to force Japan to do it, though, would be quite easy. The mother of all conspiracies is Pearl Harbor and the attack that was allowed to happen. Done shows on it. The first step was to place oil and steel embargoes on Japan, using Japan's wars on the Asian mainland as a reason. This forced Japan to consider seizing the oil and mineral-rich regions in Indonesia. With the European powers' military exhausted by the war in Europe, the U.S. was the only power in the Pacific able to stop Japan from invading the Dutch East Indies. And by moving the Pacific Fleet from San Diego to Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, Franklin Delano Roosevelt made a preemptive strike on that fleet, the mandatory first step in any Japanese plan to extend its empire into the northern resource area. The southern resource area. Roosevelt boxed in Japan, just completely as Crassus boxed in Spartacus. Japan needed oil. They had to invade Indonesia to get it. And to do that, they first had to remove the threat of the Americans' fleet in Pearl Harbor. There never really was any other course open to them. And what I discovered when I deeply researched Pearl Harbor, I found that there were only the rust buckets, the old ships that they could easily have disposed of, not the new ones that were built. They were sailed out of Pearl Harbor. But they left the old rust buckets in, the ones that they could, well, use as a sacrifice. Because Roosevelt said, I won't get into that war in Europe unless Americans die. Well, Hawaii afforded that opportunity. To enrage the American people as much as possible, Roosevelt needed the first overt attack in by Japan to be as bloody as possible, appearing as a sneak attack, much as the Japanese had done to the Russians. From that moment up until the attack on Pearl Harbor itself, Roosevelt and his associates made sure that the commanders in Hawaii, General Short, Admiral Kimmel, were kept in the dark as much as possible about the location of the Japanese fleet and its intentions. Then later, scapegoated for the attack, those two men hauled up in front of Congress. How the hell did that happen? Congress recently exonerated both Short and Kimmel, posthumously, of course, restoring them also to their former ranks. But as the Army Board had concluded at that time, and the subsequent declassified documents confirmed, Washington, D.C. knew the attack was coming, knew exactly where the Japanese fleet was in the Pacific, and knew where it was headed. It's Spaceman. It's Talk Radio, AM 640 this morning. Next. I'm a guy to call space. It's View from Space. Talk Radio, AM 640. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or just space at 640toronto.com. Thanks for the one you sent. So, you know, President Lyndon Johnson, the United States, wanted a war in Vietnam. Yeah, he wanted a war in Vietnam. He used the communists as an excuse to stop the spread of communism. But actually, he was going to help his friends who owned defense companies do a little business, and then after they flattened it all, they'd just go in and take it over and set up American businesses, the way it's been done. He needed Vietnam because he needed to get the Pentagon and the CIA to quit trying to invade Cuba. And most of all, he needed a provocation to convince the American people that there was really no other choice. August 5, 1964, newspapers across America reported renewed attacks against American destroyers operating in Vietnamese waters, especially the Gulf of Tonkin. If you know your history, that's where it started. The official story was that North Vietnamese torpedo boats actually launched an unprovoked attack on the USS Maddox while it was on routine patrol in the Gulf of Tonkin, off the shores of Vietnam. Truth is, the USS Maddox was involved in aggressive intelligence gathering in coordination with actual attacks by South Vietnam and the Laotian Air Force against targets in North Vietnam. Truth is, also, there was no attack by torpedo boats against the USS Maddox. Captain John Herrick, the task force commander in the Gulf, cabled Washington, D.C., that the report was the result of an over-eager sonar man who had picked up on his sonar the sounds of his own ship's screws and panicked. But even with this knowledge that the report was false, Lyndon Johnson went on national television that night in America to announce the commencement of air strikes against North Vietnam in retaliation for an an attack that never occurred on the USS Maddox. President George W. Bush wanted a war in Iraq. Recall? Maybe getting into your, more into the time in your life when you were a little more cognizant of your surroundings and what was going on. Just like Crassus, George W. Bush, motivated by money and power, but with the OPEC alliance failing to keep limits on oil production in the Middle East, the market was being glutted with oil pumped from underneath Iraq, which sat over about a third of the oil reserves of the entire region. George W. wanted to get a war going to stop that flow of oil, keep prices and profits from falling any further, and to begin the drawing of all forces into the Middle East area, where this third and final World War III will take place. He used the excuse for oil to get there. But like Roosevelt, he needed the other side to make the first move. Iraq, long been trying to acquire great access to the Persian Gulf, felt limited, confined a narrow strip of land along Kuwait's northern border, which placed Iraqi interests in close proximity with hostile Iran, the Persians. George W., who had been covertly arming the Iraqis during its war with Iran, sent word via April Gillespie that the United States would not intervene if Saddam Hussein grabbed a large part of Kuwait. Well, history will tell you Saddam fell for the bait and invaded Kuwait. Of course, Americans were not about to send their sons and daughters to risk their lives for oil. So George W. arranged a hoax using a public relations firm which had grown rich on taxpayer money by being the most industrious and creative liars. That PR firm concocted a monumental fraud in which the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador of the United States went on television pretending to be a nurse and related a horror story in which Iraqi troops looted the incubators from a Kuwaiti hospital, leaving the premature babies on the floor, the cold floor of the hospital, to die. How inhumane and barbaric. The media, part of the swindle from the start, never bothered asking why the nurse didn't just pick the babies up and wrap them in blankets or something. Enraged by that incubator story, Americans began to support the war called Operation Desert Storm, which wasn't really a war yet, which never removed Saddam Hussein from power at all, but which did take Kuwait's oil off the market for almost 2 years and limited Iraq's oil exports, well, to this very day. That the sons and daughters of U.S. citizens came home with serious and lingering mental illnesses was apparently not too great a price to pay in that little excursion because of what has come out of it. That proliferation of war in Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, all that whole area. It actually took out the leaders that were backed by big money and allowed, because of the void, no leadership, this new thing called ISIS to come of age and take over. And that's why Donald Trump has said that Obama was the founder of ISIS and the co-founder of Hillary Clinton, with the Clinton Foundation, all tied up in that. Because they were the ones, it was Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State, that allowed Libya to fall. Gaddafi taken out. Wanted it that way so that ISIS could take over. Allow it to grow and then draw the world into it for the final Third World War, which is going to be the final war, but the worst one before the New World Order can be born. So following that victory in Iraq, yet another war appeared to be in the offing for the mineral-rich regions of Bosnia, yet again a hoax used to create support for military action. The Fikret Alek, staring through a barbed wire fence, was used to prove the existence of modern-day concentration camps. It was a photo. The headline, Belsen 92, indicates all possible associations with the Nazi horrors were able to be made to sell this necessity of sending American troops into someone else's nation to right the wrong. But when German journalists went to Chernobyl, the site of the supposed concentration camp, to film a documentary, they discovered that the photo was, in fact, fake. The camp at that city was not even a concentration camp at all, but a refugee center. Nor was it surrounded by barbed wire. Careful examination of the original photo then revealed that the photographer had shot the photo through a broken section of fence surrounding a tool shed. And it gave the appearance of barbed wire. Once again, Americans have been hoaxed into the support of actions they might otherwise have never agreed with. A few other American presidents have willingly started wars for personal purposes, too. But maybe no president has ever carried it to the extreme like Bill Clinton. Do you know Bill Clinton is responsible for North Korea having the nuclear bomb? It's a fact. But it wasn't Bill Clinton who gave it to them. They were allowed to get it through Bill Clinton. See, the British really had all the information, and it always comes back to London. Britain had the information on nuclear technology and gave it to the people that they deemed necessary. North Korea, Russia, Israel, America. The players. Coincident with the expected public statement of Monica Lewinsky following her testimony on that sex scandal, Bill Clinton ordered a cruise missile attack on Sudan and Afghanistan, claiming to have had irrefutable proof that bogeyman extraordinaire and former Afghani ally Osama bin Laden was creating terrorist chemical weapons there. Nice distraction, huh? Spaceman, Talk Radio, AM 640. I'm a spaceman. It's View from Space, Talk Radio, AM 640. Final segment tonight's show. So I've been going through a few of the lies in history, just showing you that terrorism is an old, old trick going back to ancient Rome. As a matter of fact, that's where I started, 70 BC in Crassus, how he came to be a power in Rome. Up to, well, I'm at Bill Clinton right now with the missile attack, the cruise missile attack on Sudan and Afghanistan, claiming to have had irrefutable proof that the bogeyman extraordinaire Osama bin Laden was creating terrorist chemical weapons there. So examinations of the photo of the debris revealed none of the expected structures you would find in a laboratory that handled lethal weapons-grade materials. assurances from the CIA that they had a positive soil test for biological weapons fell on its face, too, when it was revealed that there had been no open soil anywhere near the pre-bomb facility. Sudan requested that international observers come test the damn remains of the factory for any signs of nerve gas. Bill Clinton insisted that it was there, but none was found. The Sudanese plant was a harmless aspirin factory, and the owner sued for damages even after. Then we have the hoax you all know about. You've been there, done that. It happened in your time. It was Tony Blair, Prime Minister of Britain, George W. Bush, weapons of mass destruction. Got to go in and take Saddam out. What did they find? Didn't take them 100 years, so you're all dead, so you didn't know. No, you know. There weren't any. The whole war in Iraq was predicated on a lie. Yeah. Like Germany, under Chancellor Hitler, there have been events which strike fear into the hearts of citizens. Like the New York City World Trade buildings bombing. The world changed after 9/11. Terrorism ruled. You remember the Oklahoma City Federal Building? The Olympic Park bomb? Nicely timed to divert media from witnesses of the TWA-800 that was shot down? That passenger jet? The media, real quick to blame those events on radicals, subversives, vast right-wing conspiracies, and other enemies in our midst. No different than the lies used by Cicero, Hitler, Crassus, George W., Tony Blair, Bill Clinton. But on closer examination, such domestic terrorist events do not appear to be what they are made out to be. The FBI had an informant inside the World Trade Center. Bombers. His name was Imad Salam, who offered to sabotage the bomb. The FBI told him no. The so-called hotbed of white separatism at Elohim City, occasional home to Timmy McVeigh, the perpetrator of the Oklahoma City federal building bombing. In weeks prior to the Oklahoma City bombing was found and is being run by an FBI informant. And nobody has ever really explained what this second rider truck was doing in a secret camp halfway from Elohim City to Oklahoma a couple of weeks before that bombing of that Oklahoma City federal building. So here we are today with all that and more, like the Romans of Crassus and Cicero's time, or the Germans under a newly elected Hitler. We're all being warned that a dangerous enemy threatens us. Implacable, invisible, omnipresent too, and invulnerable. As long as your government is hamstrung by that silly old stupid bunch of laws you've got on civil liberty, personal freedoms, already you can see the articles appearing, debating whether or not extraordinary measures are not fully justified under certain circumstances. But maybe now it's time. Oh, maybe we should do that now, because it's really getting dire. As was the case in Rome, as was the case in Nazi Germany, the government continued to plead with the public for an expansion of its power and authority to deal with the crisis. But as Casio watchtimers are paraded before the cameras to the stentorian tones of the talking heads' constant dire warnings, it's a legitimate question. Just how real is the crisis? And how much is the result of political machinations by our own leaders? Are terrorists really a threat? Or just hired actors with bombs? Paid for by Cicero? And given brown shirts to wear by Adolf Hitler. Is terrorism inside the United States and Canada and Europe really from the outside? Or is it a staged, managed production? As the show points out, every Illuminati event designed to cause the citizens of the Western world to believe they have no choice but to surrender the Republic, accept the totalitarian rule of a new emperor or a new Führer. Because once lost, warning, dire warning, once lost. The Romans never got their republic back. Once lost, the German citizens never got their republic back. In both cases, the nation had to totally collapse before freedom was restored to the people. And it's threatened again. Remember that when Crassus tells you that Spartacus approaches, remember that when things in the streets act in a manner clearly designed to provoke public fear, remember when the Reichstag burns down. It's over. They got you. This has been a View from Space on Talk Radio AM 640. Coast to Coast is next. I'm Space, and I'm out.